It's Nerdist Podcast number 358. I'm in a bathroom on a train from Edinburgh to London because I got to record the intro and I didn't want to do it at the seat because we have some communal seating. So I'm in the bathroom, not going number two or anything. Maybe there was a bit of number one. Kind of cleaner than an airport bathroom. I got to say, kind of cleaner. Oh, train stopping. I think we're in Newcastle. This episode is brought to you by Stamps. I'm going to make this fast. Stamps.com. It's a post office in your computer. Like, it's the future. Like, I'm... the future, like, I'm recording in a train bathroom. I hope there's no one out there that can hear this, because they're going to think I'm some kind of crazy terrorist or something. If you need to print out postage, you want to stay away from the post office, do it. You can print out the exact postage you need, put it right on your parcel or letter, postman will come pick it up, or postwoman, postal carrier, and then you won't have to leave your house if you don't want to. And it kind of looks professional, too, I gotta be honest. It looks cooler if you get the exact postage, because it means you went the extra mile, and it makes you look more diligent, and then more work will fall into your lap. So don't wait. Before you do anything else, go to stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter the promo code Nerdist. You're going to get $55 of free postage and a bonus scale. That's about a $110 offer using the promo code. So that is stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist as we pull into the Newcastle station. This is Tony Hale, who, by the way, he's got two things premiering this coming weekend, if you're listening to this the week that it comes out. May 25th, Sanjay and Craig, which is the animated cartoon on Nickelodeon that I am on with Tony Hale and Malik Pencherly and Crystal Lee and Linda Cardellini and Kunal Nayar. And also Arrested Development comes back to Netflix on May 26th, which we're super excited about it. And he's on Veep. So this guy is a powerhouse of quality entertainment. And this one kind of had a fun, hostful vibe to it, which I always enjoy when we don't know someone and they come in and just kind of fit in with the group. So here you go, Nerdist Podcast number 358 with Tony Hale. And I apologize that I recorded this in a bathroom, but it's on a fancy train from Edinburgh to London. So it's like a solid gold bathroom, spiritually. I'm going to go back to my seat and have some tea and some type of biscuits. I'm sorry. I meant cookies.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Web series here that I didn't know about.
None of us did.
You know, I just walked in and saw there was a man dressed as Batman and then a girl in a bikini. And I was like, what's happening?
Are you recording? Is it? It's actually not
unusual for this space.
It's not unusual for this place. No. It's a. If you want headphones,
yeah, there is. No, just put them on your mic. It's fine. That's how they work.
What do these do on your ears?
What are these magic listening cans?
Oh, my word.
And yeah, you can turn it up here.
Oh, fantastic.
If you want to. Tony Hale.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hey.
Hello. Tony and I have been working on... now, we're both on this Nickelodeon show called Sanjay and Craig, but we never get to record together.
I know. Do you just record by yourself?
Is that typical now, or they're just doing animation like that?
It depends on the production. When I did Barnyard, we would record as a cast because they liked having us do a passive improv, which was usually filthy and they couldn't use, but...
Yeah.
But on a lot of other shows, they kind of do. Sometimes they record Malik and I together.
Yeah, and at the first time around, they brought us all together.
Yeah.
That first read, and that was fun. But since then, it hasn't happened.
I think for a lot of productions, they are too, particularly with a cast like this, between you and Malik and my schedule and Linda's schedule and mm-hmm. Kunal's schedule and mm-hmm. Crystal Leah's schedule, I think they're just like, we're not even going to try to get everyone at the same time.
It's a really fun idea, though.
It's great.
Yeah.
Because when you get to do improvised passes, even if you don't use any of the material, it just kind of tightens the cast in a way, and you kind of get playful and fun.
Do you go to Nickelodeon to record?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's fun. Nickelodeon's great. I've been recording stuff there for like almost 10 years.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, Nickelodeon. I mean,
you're making some bank.
We're not making SpongeBob money.
Only Tom Kenny is.
Only Tom Kenny. But that take. Yeah, I think I read a. I think I heard somewhere that SpongeBob, just by itself, is worth about $1 billion a year to Nickelodeon.
Come on.
And so, the same with Dora the Explorer. It's about $1 billion a year.
So it takes 4 years and then they're worth a Star Wars? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's four years of SpongeBob is a Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's Lucas sold. Yeah.
Right. You don't have to explain
Disney
the joke. They know.
I don't
the
know.
The audience is aware.
All right. Well,
I will say there is a magic formula to Dora. Like, my daughter was obsessed with it. Like, there's something about it, because you think about it and you're like, this child is alone in the forest. With a monkey. Without her parents. Just having an adventure.
Yep.
You know, who would send their daughter out? You go find this in the forest, the dark forest, and maybe a mountain.
I wonder how many kids just left home with
their pink backpack.
With a pink backpack and a stuffed monkey, and they're like, bye. And
the parents find out, you have fun.
And they find out their kid turns up in Venezuela.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Where did you go?
Exactly.
I really thought you were going to say Venice Beach. I don't know why.
Or Venice Beach.
Yeah, sure.
That's very similar. The character of Mr. Nudeman is... There was one episode where it got really deep with him.
Yeah, it did. It did. My character is, you play Craig, who's Snake, and my character is Mr. Nudeman, who's just this really awkward guy who has this pet cat who he calls Lady Butterscotch. And he also has an unhealthy relationship with blueberries.
With blueberries,
he calls them bluebies.
He has like this weird cellar of blueberries.
Yeah, that he takes very good care of. And he's terrified of snakes. And so, and you and... you and Sanji live next door, and so then it's just kind of nutty.
But rather than being just a one-dimensional character who's just a cranky next-door neighbor,
oh, yeah.
You really, like, you get a peek behind the curtain, and you see, like, his father used to
basically scare the
shit out of him with snakes.
Snakes, yeah.
And there's a whole episode where his father... You see his father at a picnic, and he's so, like, emotionally abusive to him.
And he kind of goes in the corner with his blueberries and just weeps.
It is a funny children's cartoon.
Oh, it's hilarious. It sounds hilarious.
But it's really well done.
Well done. Yeah, it really is, actually.
It should be a title card at the end. If your father is bothering you with snakes.
Let this be a message to you.
Go to nickjr.com.
Hi, I'm Chris Hardwick. I play Craig. This is Malik Pancholi. He plays Sanjay. If you're abused by snakes, get help. The more you know.
But such great guys that are doing it. I mean, they're just normal, cool guys that I think they're doing like 40 of them or something.
Yeah,
working their butts off for it.
Yeah, it's fun. And it premieres in a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah.
I don't know, May 25th.
May 25th, I
yeah,
think.
May 25th, yeah. Saturday morning.
Tune in, kids.
Tune in.
To Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
What else are besides, well, I mean, I'm...
What else are you doing?
Besides...
We know.
We're aware. But what are you working on at the moment?
I just finished Veep. And then right now we're just kind of doing a lot of fun stuff for Arrested Press, and because that's coming out on May 26th, and then doing press for Veep, and I was gone for about 4 months doing Veep, so now being home with the family and my daughter, and just kind of that's what I'm loving.
Gone in beautiful Baltimore.
Yes, yes.
Is that where you were shooting?
Yeah, which I actually didn't mind it. I thought it was. I had great restaurants, and I kind of liked it. I didn't mind it.
Kumail liked it when he went out.
Yeah, no, Baltimore's, I
went once when I was in eighth grade because we did the D.C. trip, and then, like, they let a bunch of eighth graders go into Baltimore, and then we ended up at a Hooters with a waitress named Skittles.
What?
That's
happening?
What I remember.
That was your door experience.
Yeah,
it was our adventure. Bunch of kids from Lowell end up at a Hooters with a,
wow.
a waitress named Skittles.
First of all,
taste the rainbow.
We tried.
Awkward.
For you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Tallahassee, Florida.
Oh, wow.
My dad was in the Army, and so we traveled around a lot. And then when he retired in Tallahassee, Florida, that's where we stayed until through high school and stuff.
Florida, my dad had retired to Florida for a little while and then sort of unretired.
Yeah.
After a little while, he was like, when my dad was 70, he's like, I'm not comfortable that I'm the youngest person on my block. And so he basically just went back to Memphis and continued working.
Wait, so you were raised where?
Well, I was raised in Memphis primarily, but then I lived in Florida for a while too, in Denver and and California, and like my family moved a lot too.
Oh yeah.
So I'm familiar. But did you grow up on army bases?
Yeah, because we lived in Germany for 5 years when I was really little, and then. Starting in the seventh grade is where we started living in Tallahassee. So that's what I remember the most is in Tallahassee. Honestly, I don't remember that much sixth grade down. I don't. You're like speaking.
I feel
of
like
abuse.
Something's repressed. Were there snakes?
Yes, there were.
German snakes.
My brother's the same way. I just don't have that much of a memory. I mean, he does not. I don't know if we were moved around so much that I just nothing stuck.
Every time I start thinking about it, I vomit uncontrollably. I don't know.
I know, but it's fine.
It's fine.
Why is Tony vomiting now? But I don't know. I just don't. But seventh grade is when we stayed in one place. Is where I began to. This sounds like a bad Oprah episode.
And then what happened? Then,
well, I'll tell you.
And then in seventh grade, so seventh grade was Tallahassee, Florida. Yeah. And then were you always, was it acting or comedy that sort of drew you?
It was acting. And then there was this place called Young Actors Theater in the town that was kind of outside of the high school, middle school. And that's where I started doing shows and really cheesy, like, we had this, I mean, fun at the time, but like musicals. And then like we had things, something called Studio Singers, where we were, it was like a really bad show choir, and we had like glittery blue vests, and and we had this whole America theme once. And but at the time it was just like, I remember one time we were like, guys, we might go to the Tonight Show.
To be on or just go?
I'll tell you, we're gonna be found, we're gonna be discovered.
I mean, this is it.
It's
gotta happen.
And just
have you seen the vests?
Have you? Come on, that should take us to the top.
Well, that's
those will blend right in with the multicolored curtain of the Tonight Show.
But that's what's so funny.
That's it.
But it's so funny is to hear that and then just sort of know that the kind of the spirit of a show like Arrested.
Oh, I know.
Just completely embraces.
Oh yeah.
Glitter vests.
Totally. But it was. I mean, that was a big thing of the acting in high school, and then college. I didn't pursue. I studied journalism. And then
where'd you go?
Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama.
So close to Stanford.
Not Stanford. So I know.
So close. I mean, you do say it fast, sometimes. Just so people.
Yeah. I go to Samford.
You went to Stanford?
Well, okay. So what's your name again?
Oh. My name is Stanford.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's your favorite food?
Stanford.
Oh, shoot. I just can't get away from it. This isn't working out the way I wanted it.
Now I'm turning
like apples.
Now I'm turning into a bad 80s cartoon character whose name is Stanford who can only say the word Stanford. Like, that was it.
What 80s cartoon were you watching?
Don't you remember, like, if you watch, like, Thundercats, Snarf? Like, most of the time he said Snarf, yeah. Or there were other characters. Like,
and then
that was a convention of 80s cartoons, is that one character, Starbucks has arrived.
Hello.
Here comes Tony's tea and Chris's chai.
What happening?
Monica Moon.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
Wait, no, that's
awake tea for Katie. What is it? Give me the fucking. Oh, that took you too long.
Thank
you
so much. And now the Nerdist podcast receives their coffee
from Starbucks.
Thank you, Monica.
Ooh, what did you get?
I got an iced venti Americano.
Thanks, Mon Moon.
Awfully. Rob, do you want some of mine?
Oh my God, I feel okay again.
Would you say there's a significant difference from when you don't drink caffeine and when you do?
No, well, a little bit, but I can't really drink.
I have one. It's pounding headaches if I'm not drinking caffeine.
Can't drink coffee caffeine because coffee makes me incredibly anxious and nauseous. So yeah.
I get jittery if I drink caffeine. Is that your first caffeine of the day or is that your second?
I had a cup this morning.
You had a cup this morning. Yeah. So you get headaches.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. If it's like 3 o'clock and I haven't had a coffee, I just...
Caffeine withdrawal.
I'm just like... Yeah, I'm sure I'm addicted. Whatever.
Yeah.
That's fine.
There are
worse things you could be addicted to.
Put a nice cup of coffee in my Frasier mug this morning.
Aww.
Sat down.
What an image.
Matthew loves Frasier. When Frasier went to Netflix,
oh God,
it was like the greatest.
All 264 episodes, Tony.
Fucking... Oh, God. Life is good again.
Oh, Daphne, won't they ever get together?
Oh, they do. Season 8.
I know.
Wait, really, was it 264 episodes?
It really was.
That is...
11 seasons.
Come on. That's amazing.
I mean, when you really think about, and you know, as an actor who's been on shows, how hard it is just to get one hit show. Yeah. It's hard to be on one hit show, then to spin that off, and then have
Kelsey Grammer holds the record with the lead of Gunsmoke for consecutively playing the same character in live action for 20 years.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, 21 years. He played Frasier all the way through Cheers and then into Frasier.
And the Frasier's still running.
Yeah, it runs all over the place. Yeah. He's doing fine. Even after the divorce.
He got in under the sitcom wire where it was like they were still getting those fucking crazy syndication
deals. Well, because there's only four networks at the time.
Oh, plus the last two seasons, he was getting over $1 million an episode.
But is he happy?
I think he's
doing all right.
Seems fine. Yeah, he'll get married, get someone pregnant, divorce him, marry someone else. Okay.
You
know,
Tony, we asked you here to help us get Kelsey Grammer on the podcast.
That's so great. This is going to do it.
What's your favorite Kelsey Grammer anecdote?
I'll tell you. Episode 215.
Uh-huh.
He's like, yeah, okay.
Place at season 8. Go ahead.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Wait, so you're saying Frasier ran for 11 seasons.
Yeah.
Not,
so Cheers ran for 10, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Holy cow.
At 9 or 10. Yeah.
No, at least 10, yeah. It got into the double digits.
I haven't seen his Boss.
Boss was good. It got canceled, it was very good. But he was very good in that. I also enjoyed him as Beast in that last X-Men
movie. I thought he did a really nice job as Beast.
He did do a good job.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
That was perfect for his... And also Sideshow Bob. He's really...
Yeah. I will say I remember watching that X-Men, and there's that moment of like, is that Kelsey Grammer?
As soon as he talks, you're like, yeah.
It really surprised me.
They should have brought in a smaller, lighter blue Beast to be his
brother.
His brother.
on The Simpsons, Sideshow Bob's brother is played by David Hyde Pierce. Their father is played by John Mahoney.
Yeah,
in The Simpsons canon.
Do you think those sitcom days are over, like the days of the mega sitcom?
I don't think they're over because of Big Bang Theory is still one of those mega sitcoms.
True.
But it's literally the only one.
Well, that and Two and a Half Men.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Cash those
and
checks.
Chuck Lorre has both of them.
All those CBS ones kind of become those How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah,
that's true.
What I'd miss is, I mean, something I was obsessed with the Carol Burnett Show when I was a kid.
So good.
And Tim Conway was like such an idol for me. So that's what I miss. I miss that vibe of just stage, and then they would always make each other crack up. You get it a little bit with SNL, but...
Now, did you prefer Dorf on fishing or golf?
Good question.
Can anyone choose, really? I really, Tim Conway was such a fucking legend.
Yeah, he is,
I mean, he's still, he's still alive. Do you ever meet him?
I have met him. I met him 2 years ago, and that was a really... Because, I mean, I look at him as, in a time when... You know, typically with those kind of shows, everything, you know, I would say there was a lot of broad comedy, but he was broad, but he was still so subtle. Like, he would just do, like, a movement of his body, and it was hilarious. He just trusted that the circumstances are crazy enough, so I don't have to push. I mean, he would walk so slow across that stage, and that, I mean, it was just like, and he would do small things, and it was hilarious, you know?
And I think
same with Bob Newhart's the same way,
I thought.
But
you can see that with you when you're playing Buster, with those movements. That when you fucking, the line that kills me, the way you delivered it, is a bird flew in my window.
Oh, you were so upset.
So fucking
Why
funny.
Why are you making fun of that?
It was amazing.
That was a rough day for Buster. It was sad. You'd think Buster would have a little compassion. He took a broom to the chandelier. Yeah. He was like, I'm going to kill it.
Someone put together a video on YouTube of all of the moments where they suggested who your father was. And like with the music, there was like that.
Oh, with Uncle
Oscar.
Good pull.
Yes,
good pull.
It was that. And I remember. And what I remember about watching the show was, I don't know if I ever really picked up on that, but then when you see it all laid out one after another, it's fucking hilarious. And
I know
that's one of the genius things about that show is that you could watch the show. You could watch an episode five times and pick up a new... It literally is like a Dora episode for adults. You can pick up a new thing every time you watched it.
It was the Frasier of its time.
Swiper, no swiping.
But I remember the there was one time when we were doing some scene and there was like a post-it on the refrigerator that was a joke of a callback from episodes before. And that had nothing to do with the writing. That had nothing to do with... you know, the actors or anything. It had to do with art direction. So it was like everybody was kind of on the same page with his jokes and his vision, which was, you know, super fun.
Yeah.
Well, I know Jim Vallely pretty well.
He's the best.
That guy is just going to lunch with him one of the best shows that you could ever. He's so goddamn funny.
He's funny and just so sweet. Like, he's a really sweet guy. And him and Mitch are just a great partnership.
Well, I liked, in the 80s, he and Jonathan Schmock were this comedy team called the Funny Boys.
Oh, wow.
And they did stand-up together. And they just used to do this insane, super high-energy, really broad comedy act together that I fucking loved.
Where can you find that?
I think they were on the first annual Rodney Dangerfield, or maybe it wasn't Dangerfield at that point. They were on the first Young Comedian special for HBO, the first or the second one. And it's like 1980 or 81, and they're in a small club in New York. I don't remember which one, maybe like Catch a Rising Star or something. But anyway, it's that moment where comedy is about to boom and it's already started a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And the energy in the room is amazing and all the comics are, you know, they fucking destroy and the people just have fucking 80s mustaches and it looks
or
like 70s. Shitty video. Well, they're carrying it over. They're carrying it over. This was a 70s mustache.
Yeah.
It's an 80s mustache. Valerie is...
I wonder if I can find that on YouTube.
You can find that on YouTube. Yeah. You
can find anything on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally anything.
Almost anything.
What can't you find?
I've done some shows that didn't make the YouTube curve.
Why don't you say them now, and then we'll see if someone can upload them.
No. I will not.
All right.
I don't need YouTube to be more of a graveyard of my failures.
Hearing you talk about kind of the 284 episodes of Frasier... And
264, Tony.
260,
you gave it another
apologize.
Season. You gave it a season 12.
So, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Matt, if you're going to say that, push up your glasses.
No, but with that, and then like you remembering that about that show, do you find that you guys have a very... Your memory is just... locked, like you remember so many details of your, you know, what you've seen in history, and they just lock and you don't forget them.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I really, for some reason, just absorb whatever it is.
See, I think that's unbelievable. Like, I don't have that. I mean, yeah, exactly. Excuse me while I vomit. No, but it's just, I don't know what it is. I mean, obviously, different personalities, but it's just, I'm fascinated by that. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that, and that, no clue.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no for clue. Me, just, cause, well, I guess you understand what it's like to move a lot as a kid.
Sure, yeah.
And so for me... You know, I had a couple things in my life that, because I didn't really have a lot of friends because I moved so much, I basically had stand-up comedy. I watched everything.
Yeah.
And video games and chess club.
Yeah.
And, you know, D&D to an extent. And so that was really that was my life. So, like, every comedy thing super imprinted on me. But I wonder if now, if kids... because basically our devices are all these external hard drives where we don't really have to retain any information because it's always accessible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most of our energy is going to processing all the information that we have to process.
Yeah.
And so I wonder now if kids in 20 years are going to have crystal clear memories of things the way that we do because they don't necessarily have to.
Huh. Or the opposite, that there's just a sense of there's so much that their focus is all over the place, so it's hard to narrow it down and lock it.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, I think it was having a TV and a VCR in my room that was really either bad parenting or good parenting. Because I would just go up there and just like, I would tape episodes of The Simpsons and Seinfeld and I would watch them over and over.
I have so many old episodes of SNL, like in the Billy Crystal years.
Yeah.
Christopher Guest years.
Yeah.
Which are amazing because I have all the commercials in between. So you just all these dated.
You're an amateur. I would hit pause during the commercial break and then pause when the show came back. That way
Oh, so you can see the screen get a little wavy.
Get everything without having the commercials in there.
Do you find, since you guys have such fantastic memories, that when you're talking to somebody who doesn't have as great of a memory, that you get you remember that so-and-so? And then you get this, like, fake, like, yeah. And they're trying really, really hard to try to click in to seem cool because they're just embarrassed to go, I don't know what you're talking about.
I bet you're not giving yourself enough credit. I bet you have a specific... Like, I bet you have a specific Conway moment in your head that probably stuck with you.
Yes. I mean, but not half as detailed as I probably should have of a retained. And I think it's just like a different personality.
Conway's
thing.
Totally the kind of...
Mind you, you're talking to two people in I'm wearing a Star Trek t-shirt. He's wearing a Doctor Who t-shirt.
Oh, God.
No, I don't even think it's that. Because I've had friends... I really think it's very admirable. Because I think it's something that you have... I don't know. If I've emotionally detached or whatever.
Well, the fact that you don't remember the first 11 years of your life.
No, but I remember memories like my family, these kind of, you know, fun, loving. I mean, obviously, I had a great childhood, but it's a sense of just details that just somehow don't lock with stuff you've seen or things like that.
I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Yeah.
And this is probably a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that you were Russian-born and trained to be an assassin as a child, almost like a Bourne or maybe like a Lakid Nikita.
Are we just trying to find his trigger word now?
Yeah. Doberman.
Here's the thing. I can't continue because you might be right.
Oh, and then the podcast just ends.
What's that movie I just saw that was fantastic on it's not on a plane, about the girl that was trained by her father?
And she's like running through the woods and Hannah.
Hannah, man, that was good. Very good. That was my life.
Montana.
That was my life.
Hannah Montana.
Hannah
she
Montana.
Was trained by her father, Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yes. Miley Cyrus. There's a lot we don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot we don't know.
Maybe you were a child assassin and you just don't know. What was this time in Germany?
Yeah, that's exactly. What if it came out today and we're talking and all of a sudden I have a skill of how to handle a specific knife during this interview?
And then you...
I apologize.
I don't
know where it came from. There's just so many cool things in this store.
Doesn't everyone want to just sort of be attacked and find out that they have weird Jason Bourne skills that they didn't realize?
And just it's that kind of something was downloaded into their brain that they just know crazy things. I mean, that would be incredibly cool.
Yeah, because it also expands the idea that we really are these weird organic machines and that our brains are just these computers that have file trees in them. And some of those we don't have access to.
Yeah.
And then one day we get the pathway and then
it unlocks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sounds exciting, guys.
Yeah. Oh, get ready.
I'm on board.
I know Kung Fu. You just have it jacked into the back of your head. So when did you guys finish shooting Arrested?
We finished Arrested. It was kind of over a long period of time, but I finished probably before Christmas, and then I had to come back for a couple days after Christmas.
So for you, this happened ages ago, and it's still... Well, I guess it happened maybe 5-6 months.
Yeah, I mean, most of it actually finished before we shot Veep, and then I had to come back for here and there, but
was there a part of you where you were like, holy shit, we're back, we're actually doing
man,
this again?
Not just a part. The whole thing was very surreal.
I mean, it never happens.
It never happens, and it has been 7 years since we shot the last episode.
God damn it.
So you just kind of... I mean, I remember I'd come in and I, you know, had my Argyle socks and Buster's pastels.
Here we are again.
And he's sporting some shorts this season.
Nice.
He's sporting some shorts this season.
How high are those socks?
You're welcome first. he's showing some leg. And just getting the hook on and, I mean, all that stuff. It was just... very surreal.
When you read the script of Buster losing his hand, were you like, really? I got to do this now?
Well, it was one of those things that, you know, Mitch, who created the show, he would, you know, I remember the day he came up to me, he says, so I'm thinking your hand might be eaten off by some animal. I don't know which animal it might be. And there's that part of you, it's like, oh, shoot. I like both hands when I perform. But, I don't know. It was just, but then I realized that because I had to, my wife and I rewatched it. There's all these like hand things happening before the hand came off. So, I mean, I had no clue. I had no clue. The whole plastic hand chair. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, that's kind of a fun little idea. Not knowing my hand was going to be coming off in future episodes.
Unbelievable how dense, if you were to go through and connect all of
slice
the dots.
Slice the layers off. It's amazing.
How it has to be the most densely packed, well constructed comedy anything in the history of, like, just the way that everything ties together.
A show that late in its second season literally has Henry Winkler jump over a shark.
Yes. Yeah.
I know. And looking into a mirror and doing a Fonz move. Fonzie move. So, he's, I don't know, Mitch, he's one of those minds that it's just, there's a massive puzzle going on in top of his head. And, like, because I would read the scripts coming back, and I, to this day, have no clue really what's going on. I don't, I'm curious as anybody to see what happens. And, but you just kind of trust him. You know, you trust that he has that puzzle in his head and the Matrix, and it's going to, you know, it means something. And so he's like, do this and do this. And you're like, okay. I don't relate it to this, but I think about when that movie Moulin Rouge, and you know those actors are like, you want me to do what? You know, wait, there's going to be a green fairy here, and I'm singing on top of a roof, and but then you have to just trust the director
that he knows what he's doing,
and hopefully sometimes it doesn't come out good, but then that came out good. But you always, as an actor, you just trust, and we just trust Mitch that it really is going to come out okay and come out right.
Because you're a piece. You're a cog in the machine.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there must be some anxiety that when the finished product happens, you're just watching it and you go, God damn it.
Why did I trust?
I knew that was a weird thing
but
to
do. But here's the deal. You know that's happened tons of times.
Oh, of course. More often than not.
Oh, yeah. And they're just like, I really went on that ride. And then you see it and you're like, that's not what I expected. You know?
And then, of course, you know, people are like, the acting in this was terrible. And you're like, but I...
Yeah. Hey, oh, come on.
I was just trying to be a...
It's him.
But the emotional...
The director told me to look at the camera the whole time.
Or did he?
I don't know.
I can't stop.
Was there sort of an emotional start and stop the entire time? Because, you know, the last 7 years it was, it's coming back, or it's morphing over to this, or it's going to be a movie. Okay, it's not going to be a movie. Now Netflix is, I don't.
Well, it was one of the, I will say when we finished the last season, we never knew. We always thought we were going to get canceled the next month, so we never knew if we were going to be around. And I can honestly say, I mean, even though Fox gets a lot of crap for canceling the show, they did not have to keep us on for 2.5 years because our ratings were never good.
Right.
So it was really always the fans and the press that really kept it alive. So then after it finished, that's what continued to keep it alive. Because anytime I'd hear it, I'd be like, that'd be great, but I don't know if that can even happen, you know. And then it came to fruition, and you're like, "Wow, this is really happening."
I love when there's an episode in the second season where they acknowledge that the season order got cut back by saying that our housing order got cut back from 22 to 18.
I know.
And then they're talking about how late they get the scripts in. They're like, "We just got the blueprints in." Just amazing. Well, little layers.
Since we're talking about breaking the fourth wall jokes, I love when they're eating at Burger King.
Oh yes.
Then Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers' line, "Hey man, can I get in on some of that?" Like, that fucking killed me.
And he's back.
He came back.
Yeah, Liza's back. My girlfriend, which I'm thrilled about. She's a rock star, and she's one of those that, when you're talking to her, I just could listen to her all day long. Because
she has so many stories,
and her stories don't come from a place of like ego. It just comes from a place of like, listen to my life,
right?
And I was raised on the MGM lot, like all these kind of just nutty stories, and I just listened to her all day long.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
Does Mitch ever put you on his lap and tell you about Golden Girls?
He does. That was our lunchtime.
I do love that show, too.
I did, too.
That was a
amazing.
Fucking...
Golden Girls was amazing.
An edgy show about four elderly women that is funny to elderly women, but also...
I believe they prefer post-menopausal.
Okay. I don't know if they prefer that.
That's true.
I don't know if they prefer being...
I feel like Blanche would prefer.
...referenced to be on the north side of fertility. I don't know if they really appreciate that.
You do wonder, though, what was unique, what was attractive about it? And there was something about these men who... These men...
Oh, you just said B. Arthur in your head.
These women who...
You want a Dean Martin roast?
Who at the end of their lives, you know, have probably had careers and all this kind of stuff, and now they're together, and you're kind of curious, like, What do they talk about at the end of their life and the relationships that matter and all that kind of stuff? And there was just kind of this intrigue to it, you know?
Well, yeah.
And it was super funny, and they were very talented comic actresses.
And somehow Estelle Getty was the youngest of the cast. It was so weird.
For reals.
She was really the youngest.
Wow. I will say that was good makeup,
yeah,
too.
It was the hair and the stance.
But I
that's right.
I wonder, also, I was thinking before that Tim Conway could have totally, he would have been someone that would have been a great guest star on Arrested.
Oh, I know, yeah. And I want to say I brought him up, but Arrested was my very first gig. That was my I did commercials in theater in New York, and then I got Arrested Development. And so when I got there, I was always in a state of just like, what's happening? Where am I? I'd never been on a lot. I was just like, what's going on? And so to give ideas and stuff like that, I was always like, oh, I don't know. What do you think about it? And then they'd say, like, I don't know. I'd be like, okay, that's fine. Like, thinking about it, I think I did say his name once, but I probably didn't push his.
But I wonder, you know, just because.
He just guest starred on Big Bang.
Oh, he did?
Sorry, that was Bob Newhart. My bad.
Newhart. Yeah. Newhart was just on. But I wonder, because, you know, in Arrested, you basically, Bateman, Michael's character is he's stable.
Uh-huh.
But then everyone else is a big character, and yet it doesn't feel too big, even though everyone else is doing kind of an extreme take on on something.
Because, I mean, I think Mitch would always ground it. I mean, I remember when he came up, because I was talking about Buster, and he told me that all Buster wants in life is safety. That's all he wants. And so anything that threatened that safety, he would just spiral. You know, so there was always that kind of gauge that I could say this threatens Buster's safety. And granted, I look at some of the episodes and I'm like, am I animated? Like, I live a little broad. But there were times, really moments where you can see anything. He had to leave the house. His mother left. He just went into this state of paralysis because his safety was threatened.
Wow. Maybe you haven't thought about it, but I would love to really try to understand why a show like that didn't rate as high as... Mm. Was it because you had to pay attention too much, or because
it was very new.
It was on Fox. That's a thing they had to think about.
Maybe. But I also think, you know, I think for the large swath of the television-watching audience, like... King of Queens, Arrested Development. People are like, oh, I relate to this guy who's a mail carrier.
But to your point, I think with drama, I don't think it's the same way now, but people took a lot of time to figure out those CSIs and what's the law and order, like what's the story. But when it came to comedy, they didn't really want to think about it. It's more of just kind of a soothing, just kind of make me laugh. Because Arrested took some... You had to kind of figure out, why is he blue and what's, you know, where is he coming from? Like, it was more of, you had to kind of use your thought process. You know?
Right.
Maybe I don't know.
I started watching from the first episode, and the reason I watched it was I was like, oh, David Cross and Jeffrey Tambor have a new show.
Yeah.
So I'll watch that. And that's, you know, and then it hooked me. That pilot script.
Great, right?
It's amazing. I still have the pilot script at home.
Was Buster, did you audition as... that, or did he sort of evolve into what Buster became?
Well, I remember when I was in New York and I got the audition. And when you're in New York and you put yourself on tape, I remember thinking, I don't know if this is going to go anywhere. You know, it's such a good show. I mean, I was excited, but, you know, you kind of have realistic expectations about it. And so I auditioned, and I remember Mitch saying that when I was in the audition, you know, Buster massages people a lot. That's his extracurricular activity. And I was massaging my knees just like in the audition, but the camera was just from my chest up. So Mitch would watch the video and be like, what is he doing down there? And I don't know if that triggered an interest or
just gotta find out what he's doing. Fly him out here.
What is he doing?
But, do you want me to read the scene? No, I just want to figure out what was going
on. What was going on downstairs? But I don't know. Buster was pretty much like a 7-year-old trapped in a 32-year-old body at the time. You know, it was just a kid, really. You know, a vulnerable kid.
And then
vulnerable, freaked out, scared, rocking in a corner kid.
Find us a channel to the ocean, and he just can't look at the map. He thinks the blue is land.
I don't know. It's so over. It's like any anxiety, all of his intelligence left his body. He's just like, I can't do it anymore.
As Jessica Walter must have a million amazing stories.
I think she's one of her. Talk about comic timing. That woman has solid comic timing. She plays Lucille on the show, and
she's amazing on Archer too.
She's just so good
and a fucking great dramatic actress as well.
Fantastic, play Misty for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I have huge admiration. That's the thing, is everybody had real huge respect for everybody, each other. So it was just because with comedy, as you all know, there's the sense that when you throw something out, you just want the trust that it's going to come back, and you can ride that wave together. And so that's when it just becomes fun. And we had that.
So everyone was pretty, was everyone as a cast, oh, let's all hang out, or did everyone kind of go their separate ways?
Some of us hung out, and then we're all very different personalities. And so, but since then, it's like we've all had babies. Yep. And so it was cool to reunite because we haven't really seen much of each other because everybody kind of was doing their different things. And then, I don't know, it was one big crazy reunion special. Like, it was really odd and fun.
So what is Netflix's plan? Is it, if it does well, are they going to do more? Or is it like, oh, this was just sort of the...
I read in the press, I think they're... From what I've heard, again, I'm the worst source of information. From what I've heard, it's a movie maybe next.
Yep.
But I think the way Jason Bateman's described it is like, this is the first act. This is the first act to a second and third act in a movie. So I think I have no idea.
I hope it happens.
I know. It would be great.
Get Zach Braff to kickstart it.
Right? Right? Exactly. But I mean, it's also, I mean, not to sound cheesy, but it's that sense of if it happens, great. If not, like, it's been a great ride.
Are you pretty cool with the do you stress out? Are you anxious about the business? Are you pretty cool that, like, yeah, you know, if stuff comes along, great. If not, I don't.
I'm a pretty, I mean, there's a reason I'm probably pretty anxious characters. I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good at anxiety. But it's the thing of, you know, it's all about a support system, because I mean, we live in a constant state of rejection in this business. You're constantly rejected. Yeah. So you got to have that support. And the weird thing about our business is typically in life, people go on job interviews for 2 or 3 months and then they have a gig for 3 or 4 years. We're in a business where we're on a job interview for 3 or 4 years, and we're lucky if we get a gig for 2 or 3 months. That's a good gig.
Right.
So it's a very odd business where you are signing up for a ton of rejection, and you just have to, for me, I'm just massive on a support system, community and family and all that.
Well, yeah, because we're sort of weird freelancers. It's weird freelancy.
Yeah.
But not like a business where, hey, work is always available.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's also, as someone told me, which I've always appreciated, you can be so far into, I got to get the next gig, and you miss the gig you're on.
Yeah.
And it's that sense of waking yourself up 100 times a day to where you're at.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, now I'm having a great conversation and this is where I'm at, rather than living what's coming next, which is very challenging.
It's,
you know?
It's really hard because you know, some part of your brain has decided that you're going to forego a regular life to pursue this thing that you're passionate about. But what comes with that is, like you said, a lot of rejection and, you know, in years where you don't work and where you every day you're like, what am I doing?
What are you doing? I will say a huge lesson I learned on Arrested was when I was in New York, all I ever wanted was a sitcom. I remember thinking, like, all I ever want is a sitcom. And I would always look like, that sitcom's coming. And then I got it. And I wouldn't say it was a depression, but it was a very difficult time because nothing can match that expectation. I put so much weight on getting that job that it was that huge lesson of, and this sounds like an Oprah episode, but it's that lesson of, if you're not practicing contentment where you're at, you're not going to be content when you get what you want.
Right. Mm.
Because, and I do think it's a discipline. So that's where that whole kind of, when I'm on a job, like, waking myself up to say, I need to be aware of this, and I need to just wake myself up and be like, now I'm having a fantastic conversation on Nerdist, you know?
Because we just had a conversation yesterday with a guy who's in a band that's just started to get a bunch of success called Fits in the Tantrums. And he was saying, you know, he's like, for 20 years, I was trying to make it in the music business. And then all of a sudden, it happened. I mean, that's oversimplifying it, but it happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's you know, and I think what you sort of get into these thought patterns, and if your thought pattern is always like, I got to get that thing, I got to get that thing, yeah. I got to get that
thing. Which is our business.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Then you are conditioning yourself to always think that way, and it can be,
yeah,
it can be kind of weird.
But I don't think it's an overnight thing where when somebody says, and I hate this, it's like, oh, just be content, own it, all that. It's a discipline. Like, it's a practice to say, I've got to wake myself up. Because you can, I was so, in New York, I was always looking to what's coming. And then I got it, and it was like, that's a lot of weight I put on that.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I should be feeling something different. I mean, it was a fantastic gig, a fantastic show. And now, going back, I really was nice to have the attitude of like, I'm going to be try to be present and really enjoy this, you know, rather than just like, and I think it could be anything. I think it could be anything for anybody, finding that perfect job, sitcom, you know, fam, whatever it is. It's all you got to. I mean, this sounds cheesy, but it's like, practice it now or it's not going to come when you get it.
Well, I think most people experience that, like if they get married and they have a crazy big wedding and it's like, this is the most important.
Yeah.
And they
do it
and it's over and they're like, what? What happened?
Yeah, they're in it, and they're like, I should be feeling differently.
I should be feeling differently, yeah.
Because I've given this a lot of weight, you know?
And why am I not, and what's wrong with
and
me?
Now I'm in debt from the wedding.
I know, this is worse. But just lessons like, that was, as a great lesson to learn, you know? I'm really thankful for it.
And, you know, it's, you know, I'm sure people who, I'll tell people who aren't in the business are like, oh, the tough performers, you got to go.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's like, yeah, I know, it's not, you know, it's not labor-intensive work, but it's emotionally labor-intensive. And, you know, to go through something where every day for years you're constantly being told, like, you're not good enough, you shouldn't get this, you're not this enough, you're not that enough.
But it's also, I mean, it's also my fault for not focusing on what I have, for not enjoying it. I mean, that's, if somebody, oh, how can you even complain? Yeah, I mean, I can have rough days, but if my general thing is like, oh, I need to get this, that's something I need to check in myself. Like, yep. I need to say, you know what? I got to wake myself up to be, not as a shame thing, but be like, you know what? I've got a great family. I've got friends who love me. I'm doing what I love. Like, I got to wake myself up again.
Well, I think that's why some people spin out of control, because they get to that moment and they're like, why isn't this better than I thought it was? And then they just they start doing crazy drugs, or they start doing just to try to
keep that buzz,
just to get the buzz going, rather than just
to almost match the expectation that they've given it in their mind.
Right.
You know, it's like they've given a lot of weight to this, and they get there and it doesn't feel right. And it's like, okay, I got to add some stuff to get that.
That's why it's what I find is interesting when you watch any junket or interview, you know, particularly with someone who's on a big show or a big movie or something, and I always pay attention to this. If you watch, no one ever really answers the question, what's it like to work on that thing in an effective way? They go, what's it like to work on, you know, Mission Impossible? Like, oh, it's fun. You know, like, they can't really relate it ever to anything because it's a weird...
Well, it's also that you can feel somebody talking about that, be like, that must be amazing! And they're on the other side going, yeah, I mean, I'm still, you've given me a lot of expectation. You know, it's still a gig, and it's a crazy gig, but I've still got a family, I'm still trying to make this work. You know, it's that kind of thing, like feeling guilty almost that you can't match, or that they can't match someone's expectation put on them.
Well, it's also very result-oriented, because it's not like, you know, when you're doing it, you're focused on your work, and so you're not really, you're not stopping every 5 minutes to go, hey, guys, check it out.
MI5.
Yeah. And it's not really until after the movie's done where you could take a step back and go, oh, the result. Yeah, oh, that was a thing,
that was
a thing that we made. Okay, no, that was really.
And to me, it kind of goes back to, at the end of your life, it's all about relationships. Like, have I made the most of my relationships? Have on the film, like, have I been an ass, or have I gotten to know people and treated people right? I mean, that's all that has longevity. Everything else, it's like, do you really want the end of your life, your legacy, be like, God, he was a douchebag? You know, it's like, who cares? It's about those relationships.
Did having a child help ground you with a lot of that stuff? Did it give you something to focus on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it simplifies. You know, it simplifies those. Sorry, I'm like losing my voice. I apologize. You guys are very trained in your resonance, and mine clearly is not.
You don't want to speak too much from your throat, Tony.
Clearly, I am.
Yeah, we do about
you wanna,
4 hours a week. Gosh,
you want to talk from your muzzle and then just push the air from your diaphragm.
You just wanna,
you're talking through it right now.
You want to let it escape.
That was not muzzle talk just now.
It wasn't?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. You sound, Tony, you just sound like you have bad allergies.
That was good muzzle talk.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyways, but my daughter, it is. It's that kind of thing. Like when I had her, she is so simple. You know, I love how kids, it's just like, you know, they get a friend's coming over and it's like, a friend's coming over. Life is fantastic. And you know, and you're around that and you're just like, yeah, that friend's coming. And because we have friends, we don't have that. I mean, not that we need to have that kind of excitement, but everything is so, they own it.
Yeah.
And that is where you're like, yeah, that's a simple way of thinking.
And not when you're an adult, you're like, friends are coming over. Yeah. I gotta pick up the place.
I know.
I have to make food.
No, they're gonna
next time your daughter's
wine.
Like excited, friends are coming over. Like, yeah. Well, if you had a mortgage, you wouldn't be this excited.
Yeah, that's right. Just dampen that as much as possible. Use the Myra method, kid. I'm preparing you for life. You're not gonna realize it now, but I'm being a good parent. I'm preparing you for life.
Oh my God, I gotta write a book. It'll go right next to the Nerdist Way, the Myra method.
Yeah, you got your title.
Don't expect anything ever.
Listen, you did a scene with R2-D2. It was still shitty to fly up there in the same fly back the same day.
my buddies just did a film, and they were the Lucas Ranch or the
Skywalker Ranch.
They went up there to edit it to do sound, and I was telling them, and they were the way they were talking. It was like, just like, what an experience. And we were just back and forth like, own that, like that you were at Skywalker Ranch. Yeah. You know, and it's very difficult to get in, just kind of the details, which is understandable because you're creating, but just like for a moment of like, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah,
you know, that's like such a childhood fantasy.
Yeah, there was a moment of like, okay, I have to get up out of this couch so R2-D2 can move correctly for the scene. I'm like, well, all right, I can do this.
It is. I think that's why I get so excited about things all the time, because it's just shocking to me that to be able to do all this the silly stuff and then it's work is pretty insane. Just because, you know, from where I grew up, I know a lot of people who, you know, who ended up working good jobs, but
sure.
but I know that aren't like super happy about, you know, where, you know, you talk to them and they're like, yeah, it's good. You know, I mean, it's that kind of tone. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, it's
but
all
then,
right.
But then you meet people who you qualify as having fantastic jobs who have the same attitude.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, it's, you know, I did two features. Yeah, yeah. So it's all in the attitude of the person. Like, it's all in the, because, I mean, I don't know. It kind of goes back. I mean, I can find those same people in doing like crazy, what I would see as fantastic jobs, but it kind of goes back to just that personal attitude.
And then you meet a guy. I was in a hotel recently, and there was a guy who was basically was like a janitor, and he was walking by. I'm like, hey, how's it going? He was like, every day is great,
right?
Like, just like so happy.
Yes.
And then you go. You know, and not, I'm not, you know, it's probably arrogant to say like, well, that guy, you know, how come he's so happy? But just the idea that he just didn't seem to have a care in the world and everything was great and he was thankful to be alive. And then you go, I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah. Well, the Matt Myra method would be, really? Every day?
No, the Myra method would be, you missed a spot. Aww. Keep him down, Matt.
That's right.
But I think it's cool that he woke up with that choice. You know, like he woke up to have that choice, and it is a choice to have that attitude.
Happiness is a choice.
But I will say that it's. I think it's also owning that if you're having a bad day, it's like I can own, like, you know what, this is a crappy day, but I can at least try to be present in this bad day and
well,
not.
Yeah, and it's there's a difference between having a bad, and I think it does all boil down to sort of like living in the moment. There's a difference between I'm having a shitty day and I fucked some things up and some people got mad at me about stuff and I just don't feel that great. And sometimes just the chemistry of your brain just feels bad.
Sure, yeah.
But there's a difference between that and then like everything's ruined. It's all ruined, you know. Like, there's a difference between those two things of catastrophizing.
Exactly.
In most cases, not in all, because some people have circumstances that make it very difficult. And you know, I don't want to seem unsympathetic, but in a lot of cases, happiness really is a choice, and it is work because we get very comfortable. You know, especially if you're comfortable with rejection, you just kind of get comfortable being in a negative place, and you're like, "No, the world."
But I also don't think it's necessarily an emotion either, because I mean, I think in our world, it's defined as an emotion when it's just really, I think, a state of being, like being or trying to be content, trying to be present, having kind of joy where you're at, but not necessarily walking around like, you know, we see like people just laughing and smiling.
Right.
And I'm happy. It's like, okay, but there's someone can just be stone-faced and staring and be peaceful and be completely, you know, present and content where they're at.
Yeah.
You know?
But then when you have ever had this situation...
This turned into like
No, it's good.
A chicken soup for the soul.
It is.
The podcast is.
This is... have you ever had this experience where you're walking down the street and you feel fine and someone walks by and they go, "Hey, man, cheer up!"
I know,
and
right?
Then, and then you get mad and you're like, I wasn't.
I'm actually pretty here.
I know that you think you're helping, but that's really insulting. You don't know anything about me, even though you're trying to help.
Don't put your definition of happy on me.
See how angry you are? No, you just... Oh, come on!
Sorry, man, just using the Meyer method.
Not again! Are you tired of having fun, functional relationships?
Hey.
What? I didn't mean...
They all function.
What would you say?
That's chapter two. They all function.
You wake up the next day.
What no would one
you,
died.
What would you say is a big lesson you've learned in the last five years that has you never have forgotten being in the business? That has kind of helped you kind of, you know, on days or move forward or...
Always take Olympic.
Always take Olympic.
That's Bernie Brillstein's.
That's Bernie Brillstein's.
That's Bernie Brillstein's book. Always take Olympic Boulevard. Still works.
Also, Sixth Street's a good one, too.
Yep, I agree.
Sixth is great. I agree. We're giving away all the secrets, guys, man. Guys. But you can't turn left on Rossmore between 4 and 7.
That's true.
So you got to go one
street
past. I
live over there, too.
Yeah. One lesson that I've learned. One lesson that I feel like I'm continuing
to... Or do you like to share kind of with something that you've... A nugget of something.
You know, one thing that I've learned within the last year, because the stuff that I've been working on has gotten a little more public, and so there's been a lot more, and I'm very directly connected to people on the internet, is to not be as precious about myself. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, not be as like, how come that guy said a shitty thing? You know, like that was. That's something that it's not worrying about as much what other people think or trying to be liked as much, you know.
And also kind of the catastrophic thinking of taking maybe what they said and making it huge in your mind, like I do this, make it huge in my mind when it's, that might not have been the intention.
Right.
That kind of stuff. Because we can, I mean, we're creative people, so I can create crazy scenarios in my head that probably have never entered their mind.
Right.
You know?
Do you have siblings?
I do.
You do. Okay.
I have a brother and sister.
Because I wonder if there's something in the psychology of just of moving a lot and not, you know, and always kind of having to reestablish friends or some type of thing if there's any kind of weird thing about that. Was in the Army-based system... Was there like a set, and these are the Army kids, and then this is where they all play? Like, was it very regimented in that way?
Now you're tapping on the memory.
Oh,
you know,
shit.
But, I remember. I don't
What did you say?
Why is his nose bleeding? What did you do?
That's fine. It's lost. I remember just, it was very Americanized, I don't remember any kind of distinction. I remember going outside the base. I will say, when we lived in Heidelberg, we lived on a base, and then we moved to Berlin for 2 years, and we lived in this house that the Army gave my dad, which was this very sad, like the Army took it over from the Nazi regime, and then they would give it, and then the Army owned it, and then they would give it to kind of lieutenant, like people who served and stuff. So we were living in this huge house, and I remember going downstairs, and this is a crazy story, the Nazis took it over from wealthy families, I assumed Jewish wealthy families, And then they had it. And then when the army came in and took it, then they took over the house. But I remember going downstairs with my brother, and I had tripped on something and hit a bookcase, and it opened. Yes. And it was where, I mean, it was so sad. It was where the Jewish people were hiding. I mean, they would have these hideouts, and they would hide people.
Were they still in there?
They were. It was actually, I remember opening it and being like, there was a moment of, oh, what are we going to find? What are we going to find? And there was pots.
Just pots?
Like, so there was pots. So they were using it like a gardener, like a, I guess like storing parts.
I mean,
pots.
That is like a...
But it was like, it was the kind of thing that Goonies all of a sudden was coming alive. And yeah. I was like, but there was that moment, yes, but then we saw the pots and we were like, oh, I guess people
That is kind of a classic, like, you know, C.S. Lewis or sort of a Jumanji, like, and then I just tripped and then a bookcase opened. Yeah. Like, that's pretty amazing.
And I mean, I wish my brother here, he could confirm it, because it was very much like, somehow we bumped into it, either tripped or something, but we saw it move and we were just like, the bookcase, we can open that bookcase.
Oh my gosh.
I'm about to explode.
That's pretty incredible.
I know. So, but I do remember the base being very kind of its own community, and then going outside was obviously Germany, and it was very different. Yeah.
I'm still thinking about your question about something that I've learned in the last 5 years. I know. No, you go.
I'll tell you a lesson I learned.
Please.
Or I'm continuing to learn, which is very difficult, is the whole thing of, in this town, I think really in any town, is the value of words. Because, in you know, I can say in this town, someone's yes is really not yes and their no is not no.
Yeah.
Because I think people are so afraid to burn bridges, they're so afraid to hurt feelings, that they say like, yeah, and then they don't follow through. And it's that whole thing, if I think you really, and it's a challenge, but it's like, I think you can really be different and make a difference by letting your yes be yes and your no, no. Even though it hurts someone's feelings, like if someone asks you to do something and you so badly don't want to hurt their feelings, you say, yeah, is it worse to say, you know what? No, I can't do that right now, and it'd be hurt then, rather than string along somebody
right
for so long,
and then have your word mean nothing.
And then your word mean nothing. And there's really, and when I've met people, even though, you know, sometimes their words, if they say no or whatever, I value the fact like they followed through on their yes, and then they had their no meant no.
Yeah,
and I think there's value to that.
I that is an excellent point, because especially if you're, you know, if you want, it is, it's like, it's trying to be nice in the short term. It's short term versus long term thinking, and short term thinking can be really damaging.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when you think about how many things you do that are fucked up that are just to solve a problem in the short term, like, oh, I'll just do this. Or even if it's like, ah, I shouldn't eat that thing, but it'll make me feel good right now. Or I should just say that thing to that person so they'll feel better right now, because you don't really think long term.
I should eat that thing and I feel good right now. I know that one.
So do I, man. So do I.
It's chapter 9, Myra Method. but it really is like, you know, there was a time when people were only had their word.
Yeah.
And it was, and of course, you know, I think you find that if you do follow through on something you say you're going to do, people are like, wow, thanks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was just, because most people
but
don't.
It's also why you, I can only speak for myself, but why I have not let my yes be no, my no be no, is because I'm so concerned that someone's not going to like me, or it was fear-based.
Yeah.
And it's rather than actually thinking about them and giving them the respect of a valued answer that they can carry, you know, which is actually, you're actually respecting them more rather than so concerned that they're not going to like you in that moment.
Is this why you ultimately agreed to do Batman on Batman on Attack of the Show?
I really... Oh, my...
I worked on Attack of the Show. I was a segment producer. Yeah, but I wasn't down there for that shooting.
That was actually pretty fun.
Yeah, no. We had you hanging upside down for a while. I remember looking at the monitor. Like, I was upstairs and I looked at the studio feed.
See, I followed through. I followed through.
He did.
I followed through on my yes.
We had Tony hanging upside down.
That's why he says no to people now, because of what you guys did.
That was the moment I learned this lesson.
It's like, what, a half hour you're hanging upside down? I was like, he's still upside down, guys.
Those are those kind of things that you, like...
His head is swelling up like a tomato.
He's fine. And he's throwing up.
He just talked about his childhood. Don't worry about it.
Keep talking. Get it on film.
He just remembered sixth grade.
Yeah, they hung him upside down.
Finally.
He starts freaking out. Well, here's something that I think is important. You know, as a performer, sometimes it's easy for people to say, like, you know, don't worry what the public says. Just make the thing that you want to make. And to an extent, I think that's true. But if you are a performer or you're a creator, you do form a relationship with your audience. So it is kind of important, you know what
sure.
they think. I think it's good to ignore people who are extreme.
Yeah.
Well, I think the country as a whole has ignored extreme since the 80s.
Yeah. Really good point.
But I mean...
And there we have the introduction.
There it is.
The
But if they're for anyone who's a creator, like who makes something, I think it's important to really understand that your thing doesn't have to get 100% approval, because it's never going to get 100% approval.
It's never, yeah.
And so, you know, as long as you can shoot for a decent mm-hmm. number, then you're probably doing okay with the audience.
As long as there's a dislike button next to the like button,
yeah,
you're gonna get some dislikes.
Yeah, no matter what. Yeah. And not to take that personally. That's just the
which to acknowledge is hard. I mean, I think, you know, many times when people say, "Don't worry about what people think," you know, walk away from that audition, you know, forget about it. I'm human. You know, it's hard not to focus on those things, and that's why it's like almost what I try to do is just like be aware of like, oh, okay, that hurts, and I'm gonna own that and be aware of that, and then just keep walking.
Yeah, you don't know? Have to make everyone like you,
because I think many my humanness wants that, but if somebody doesn't, it's like rather than me, which I've done many times, try to control for them to get me to like me, like, okay, I'm gonna just feel like, all right, that sucks and that hurts. I can't control it, but just keep walking.
Well, that's what when this conversation we had with Nick Offerman on the podcast was the idea of, you know, I said, you know, I sort of jokingly said, like, Nick, what makes a man a man? And then we kind of got into this really serious conversation, and then the net result of it was
brute and sawdust.
Typical.
And secondarily,
I'm way off base. Hence Buster.
Using a squirrel as a roll-on deodorant.
That's an amazing image. That's fantastic.
Just using the forest. Using the forest. But
we're just shaving, doing the thing. Instead of the badger hair on the thing, you just actually use a badger with the shaving cream on.
Or just you just grab a beaver and flick his head back and shave him off with his fucking teeth. It's the idea of, like you're saying, it's ownership. Ownership. If you can take ownership over your emotions, over your actions, mm-hmm. over then that's really what being a mature person is all about.
Yeah, but don't you think, and I've done this many times in my life, don't you think the opposite of that is what I've done in my life, where something happens and I choose to not feel it, I choose to not, you know, own the experience, and then I just detach. I find something to medicate with it, or I just choose, obviously, maybe to not remember it, or to, you know, but just to kind
like
of,
from 0 to 10.
Or as a performer, you choose to perform, just to kind of just divert the attention rather than like, all right, that hurt. I'm going to feel that hurt and own that hurt and be aware of it. And then, because it actually, you can walk through it that way.
Yeah. I don't know if that's detaching. I think that's using the energy creatively, where someone, you know, might get rejected and then they'll go, well, I'm never going to do this again. I think that's detachment.
Sure,
as opposed to, I feel bad and I'm going to channel that and make something that you know is my own thing, and that no one you know, like, to take that energy and actually do something constructive with it, I think is ownership.
I would couple that with yes, and I would couple it with, as long as I think there has to be a moment where you do feel that hurt.
Sure.
Like okay, that hurt. Yes, channel it, definitely. But it's like, I think if you spend your whole life just like diverting it,
yeah,
and just be like, I'm going to do this and this and this, there has to be a time where you say, oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. But I think the creative process is part of the healing process. I think
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that.
You know, you feel and you're healing up, and then it's like, okay, now what can I do? Because really, turning any kind of a situation into some type of creative endeavor, artistic endeavor, is taking ownership of it, because you're taking those emotions and going, I'm gonna do this with you now. I'm gonna express this.
Yeah.
After I felt it, I don't. You know.
Mm-hmm. I agree with. Yeah.
Maybe you can't do that until you feel it, or maybe you need to. Maybe you need to do that first
to feel it.
To feel it.
Yeah.
So that you can get an outside perspective and go.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because you know, with like, with stand-up, and I mean, obviously, you know, my first comedy special wasn't really like I was talking about any heavy issues. They were just a lot of silly dick jokes. But when I look at it, I was like, oh, I guess there was this thing that I was trying to express that I didn't realize in the process, and I guess that's what it was. I mean, mm-hmm. it was nothing heavy.
Yeah.
But for some people, it can be.
Sure. Looked heavy.
The suit was heavy. Yeah, it was a heavy suit.
Was heavy.
I should not have gotten in a tub in a suit before I went on stage. I thought it would be shinier if I did that.
Cool off.
I think the other thing, this is like life lessons. But the other thing is, I think when you are doing those endeavors or that thing's coming, like what I was saying before about I want to do this and you kind of miss whatever you're in, whatever. I think many times we give ourselves value. If I'm to get that, then I have value.
Yeah.
And we put so much identity on getting that, which I did, being in New York, like getting a show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and even though I wouldn't say it, I think there was a part of me that was like, I will have value then. My identity was so wrapped up in that. And that's almost like awakening ourselves up to, oh, no, we all have value now. We have tremendous value outside of all this stuff that we're doing.
You, no matter what you do or no matter how much you succeed, you still have the same baggage. No matter what, like nothing, no material thing fixes you. You still have to figure out how to be okay with yourself. And then, you know, guys that you talk to, you know, guys we've had on the podcast.
Chapter 10 of the Myra Method says electric guitars will fix you. Buy as many as you want. Chapter 11, they don't work.
Fill the hole using a vintage Rickenbacker as a shovel.
But cut to a picture of 10 credit cards maxed out.
But people we've had on the podcast that I have tremendous respect for, whose careers I think are great, who seem to do like whatever they want and seem happy, like guys like Bryan Cranston or Will Ferrell or whatever, like they just seem like, you know, when I go, do you feel anxious about stuff? They're like, eh, not really. Like they just seem like, oh, they're pretty well-adjusted guys.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, on a certain level, people pick up on that when they watch them, and that's why you kind of can't take your eye. I think that's one of the things that makes a person kind of magnetic and draw you in, is that they seem like they've figured something out.
Yeah.
And that thing that they figured out is like they're just comfortable with themselves, which is a crazy concept to a lot of people.
I would agree with that. I think there are obviously things that they're probably not comfortable with themselves, like anybody.
Yeah.
But I think it's through life's lessons and probably being in this business a long time and making choices, healthy choices, they probably come to a place where it's like, I've given a lot of energy to stuff that does not matter.
Right.
And even though that doesn't change overnight, but there's an awareness of it of like, that's interesting. I'm going to start making some different choices.
My dad always says, don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. It's my dad's logic.
It's Billy Hardwick logic.
Don't sweat the small stuff. It's all small stuff.
Where does he live?
Well, mostly in Memphis and partially in Florida.
What part of Florida?
Bradenton.
The humid part.
Right outside of Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Right outside of Tampa.
Yeah. Do you go down there a lot?
No, because I visit my dad in Memphis because I know people there. And,
right.
You know, my dad's owned a bowling center there for 30 years. And so when I go, it's like I get to go kind of where I grew up.
Yeah.
And when I would visit him in Florida, you know, we would just kind of sit in the house.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's oppressively hot outside.
Yeah.
And so you don't really want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And
there's Dairy Queen.
There is a DQ.
On every corner.
Steak and Shake also. Steak and Shakes are all over the place.
Love it.
And Cracker Barrels. There's Cracker Barrels in Florida.
A lot of Cracker Barrels. Yep.
And so, you know, so now I go visit, I go visit my dad in Memphis, which feels a little more like home.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it was just, I don't know. Florida, I lived in Miami. My mom's from Miami, so it's a little bit in grade school.
I did it for 6 days.
He moved to Florida for 6 days and hated it so much he moved back to Boston.
No, you're lying.
I'm not lying.
Wait, when was this?
2004.
And you went with a friend, or
my entire family moved down to Florida.
Okay.
And I was 21, and I was like, well, I should probably finish school. Maybe I'll transfer to UCF. So I was going to go transfer to University of Central Florida. And got there, and I just found the heat so oppressive, and something really bothered me about Florida, which was it's so flat. There's no feature to the landscape other than it being flat.
Mm-hmm.
And the humidity was ridiculous, and I found myself, it was the middle of the summer, and I found myself just driving to the Barnes & Noble, which was next to a Jesus Christ Superstore.
Okay,
that's the name of it.
Amazing.
That's the name of it. And
oh man, that's phenomenal.
On the third day,
who in the world do you think you are? Sorry.
Was it a Christian bookstore?
No, you could get anything. Anything you wanted. You get a statue, you get a candle, you get a book.
But it was all religious stuff.
Yeah,
but it was all religious stuff.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I see.
But, you know.
Jesus Christ. Unbelievable.
I think
there's actually a Christian theme park down there as well.
Oh, yeah, I think there is, too. Yeah, yeah, but, like, it was just, I just sort of looked around and I was like, this is what I'd be in for if I were to stay here. And then I just drove back home and I was like, Mom, buying a one-way
ticket. Did you go up to Panama City to the Redneck Riviera?
Oh, I've been to Panama City.
Didn't get up there.
I personally love Florida. I think it's not rolling hills, but there's something, I guess, being raised there.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
I love me a good mall. I'm not going to lie.
Well,
I love Panama City, I remember.
I love a food court.
They've also mastered air conditioning.
To the point where you have to have it. It's like Texas.
You need a jacket.
It's fucking blazing hot outside, and you go in, and you're like, now all the sweat is beating on my body.
But that does happen.
That's extra cooling, though.
Yeah.
But when MTV, we used to do the spring breaks in Panama City. And so we'd go to Panama City, Florida, and the memory that I have of Panama City was
just how great the Dave Matthews Band was.
I had lunch with them one day. I had lunch with the Dave Matthews Band.
Sad. Boyd Tinsley started following me on Twitter yesterday. He's the violin player.
Oh,
for the Dave Matthews Band.
That's
anyway.
Sweet. Anyway, but what I remember of Panama City was
welcome to our world, Tony.
I love it.
Waffle House, Strip Club, Waffle House. And then Strip Club, Waffle House.
And probably a lot of the Waffle House workers probably worked at the Strip Club.
Or a Strip Waffle House.
Yeah, never know. Which, I mean, it probably exists.
Where the top comes off and then the waffles are right there.
All right,
and
that doesn't exist. What? But, you know, where you could get a good waffle.
Do you know that?
I don't know for sure.
That's a place you would have ended up in eighth grade on a field trip.
Myra Method tells me.
Skittles.
Where is Skittles?
Do you know something?
If you're out there, Skittles.
I bet you I could get you. I bet you I could help you get a book deal to write an anti-self-help book.
Oh, I'm on board.
So people, you know, you could start a whole trend where people would walk into a bookstore, if they still exist in the near future, and go, excuse me, where's the self-destruction section?
Oh, you want the Myra Method.
The Myra Method. This is the only one you need. This is the only one you need.
It's like an immediate, oh, the Myra Method, this way.
Take Santa Monica Boulevard. That's the self-destruct.
Listen, you're already a ticking time bomb. I'm just going to give you an LED screen so you can see when it's going to happen.
Oh, God. What a delight.
Have you ever wanted to write a book? Have you ever thought about writing a book?
No. I haven't.
I do want to. I do want to write a book.
That's
I don't know what it would be.
The idea started today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Any other city you think you'd want to live in ever?
Prague. Why I say Prague, I don't know.
Prague. I would actually, I don't know. I really love in L.A. right now.
Yeah.
I really like it. So I don't know if there's...
Fair to say you hate New York City, it's cold and it's damp. Chicago, where the wind blows.
Yes.
Anyway, I don't remember the rest of the
But I was there, I was in New York for 8 years, and I love visiting. I don't know if I'd want to live there again, but I really enjoy visiting. I like the weather here. I love California, because before this, I never lived in California. So I really like it.
It is good. I mean, you know, sometimes the heat gets to me.
Here?
I get angry at the sun sometimes. That's in Myra Method, chapter 12.
Wait, where were you raised?
The sun. Boston.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you miss seasons.
I do miss seasons very much. I miss the fall.
Yeah.
But I will say this. January, like end of December to the end of February, it's kind of can feel like fall sometimes here.
I like seasons to a degree. But when I just performed in Denver, we landed in a snowstorm on Wednesday, May 1st. Mm. And then the next day, it was like sunny and 50 degrees, which is gorgeous there.
Yeah.
And when we picked up the rental car, there was this big, giant SUV that we ended up swapping out for something else. But all this snow had come into the car through some crack in the... maybe the windows were cracked, I don't know. But basically, when we opened the door, there was all this snow in the car. And so when I went back to the counter, I must have looked like the biggest fucking piece of shit Los Angeles person. Where I go, I want to trade my car, and there's snow in the car. And
something's very cold in
something
my car.
And the guy goes, yeah, it's Denver. And I go, I'm not dumb. I know that it's snowing outside right now, but there's something weird about the car.
It's coming in certain ways.
It's getting in somehow.
It's like that Forrest Gump rain, you know, when it goes sideways.
Yeah. Something's
happening in the snow.
It comes underneath.
You have some kind of specter snow.
Your snow can temporarily just change its matter and go through doors.
Now, I don't know if the last customer was a snowman.
And I want to live here now.
I don't know if your last customer was that kid's father that died, you know, Jack Frost, but
when I hear some
I would believe it.
When I hear some people in Los Angeles go like, "You know, I really miss seasons," and I want to go, "But you don't really. What you want is New York in the fall." Like, but you don't you know, you don't want like
you
Minnesota sneeze
subway
seasons.
Subway hot in New York.
Right.
It's just horrible.
Oh, the humidity in New York can be unbearable too, but
you're
like
right, the fall is
the fall's amazing. I like the winter too. I like a good snowstorm because there was always something for me as a child that was just very calming about the snow. And when it snows and there's a coating and you walk outside, it literally dampens all the sound. So it's just this nice lull.
You're right.
You want that feeling of the last scene of Home Alone where it's already happened.
Yeah.
And it's a nice blanket of snow, but not navigating in the...
Cut to all those PAs that were making that snow look so, so smooth. No one can step on it for days. CGI.
That house was for sale. I wonder if it sold.
The Home
house
Alone
in
house?
Illinois. That, yeah. The
home, it was
the
Illinois.
Home. Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, because it was John Hughes.
Yeah, it was. I think the house was going for like $1.5 million.
Shermer, Illinois.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if that was in Shermer, but a lot of his movies took place in Shermer. Is there anything? Okay, so Sanjay and Craig, May 25th, Arrested Development. Are they releasing all the episodes at once?
Yeah, they're going to dump it.
They're going to what?
They're going to dump it.
Yep, they're going to dump it on May 26th, and then Veep is airing on Sunday nights at 10.
You are all over the place, Tony Hale.
So grateful.
Get your dragon and grateful. Titties in, then you watch some comedy, you have a good night.
But the Myra method suggested it's not everything that you had hoped it would be.
That's true. That's true. It still isn't.
What I need you to understand with the Myra method is how things can go wrong.
No, you're like, what I need to understand, that negative way of thinking, stay in it. Don't leave.
Give in to it.
Give in.
It will feed you.
You have basically a TARDIS hole that can never be filled.
That's right. Well, no, guys, I'm pretty happy. We're all having fun here. The Myra method,
what's the show that you would say gets you giddy 5 minutes before it comes on?
For him, it's got to be Frasier.
No, that comes on anytime I want it, so I'd be constantly giddy.
But it's a show airing now, like a show that you haven't seen each episode.
Honestly, for me, it's when there's a new Kitchen Nightmare sitting on my DVR.
Wow.
I'm like, how's he going to do this now?
Wait, is Kitchen Nightmares, that's Gordon Ramsay still, right?
Yeah.
And is that when he goes into a new kitchen and tries to transform it?
That's when he goes in and fixes a restaurant, yeah.
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 What's yours?
Wait, I want to find out yours first.
I have a bunch that I get excited about.
All right, let's pick one that isn't The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Doctor Who or Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Wait, Doctor Who, the new?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Game of Thrones I get excited about. I even get a little giddy about True Blood because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, I started watching a little bit of True Blood. I'm not from the beginning. I kind of catch it here and there, and I love that whole kind of making a whole, I mean, I'm saying stuff that you guys already know, but that whole making a town accept it, like the whole, like a convenience store that sells
True Blood.
True Blood. That whole thing is just, did it start that way or did it become?
The show started as really more of a, it's Alan Ball, and it started more as like, I think a, like an allegory maybe for intolerance.
Uh-huh.
And so there was not a lot of hocus pocus in the show in the first handful of episodes.
Huh,
it was
okay.
Just a lot of like basically, you know, this southern town sort of treating vampires the way they would, what I assume the way they would, you know, a minority or gay people, intolerance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then at some point someone was like, well, the show's about vampires. You probably should have. And then within a season, fucking everyone was some kind of magical creature.
Yeah.
And it was all about that. And I think what I like about the show is that it's so ridiculous. It's such a soap opera, but it just happens to be a soap opera about vampires. I mean, like, the show has no,
I think every show has magical creatures because we're all just magical creatures.
We are magical.
Humans, you know?
Well, there was that, I did see the one where there was fairies or some kind of, there was like a whole fairy community.
Oh yeah, there was a fairy community. Then, there was a weir panther community.
But then the guy who's the lead vampire, and somehow the fairy got out of its magical realm and he could see her because he came to eat fairies. And I'm telling you, he demolished this woman.
Oh, you're talking about like the older guy who played Russell Edgington. I can't remember the actor's name, but he's a fucking great actor.
He's an amazing actor. He was coming to hunt fairies,
yes.
And they were in their magical disappeared land.
Yeah, yeah.
And then somehow she came out and was not... He could see her.
Yeah.
And he ripped
fucking
her
fucking destroyed
apart.
Her. She exploded.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Because fairy blood to vampires is like crack.
Yeah.
And it
it's
helps
like the ultimate.
Them, it helps them be a little resistant to daylight.
Oh, that's nice to know.
Yeah. In this iteration,
good information.
His name's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think what it is.
William Forsythe.
It's William.
It's not William Forsythe.
You sure?
Okay. I'm positive it's not William Forsythe.
Well, what's your show, Tony?
I love that I asked the question and I forget my own. I will say we just finished watching it. I mean, of course, I love me some Veep, but I just finished House of Cards.
Oh, you do like House of Cards? I haven't seen it yet.
I really, really enjoyed it. I think Kevin Spacey is obviously fantastic, but Robin Wright Penn, man, unbelievable. I thought
she
was fantastic.
She's great. I love how they came up with that show.
It's really dark.
I need to have shows that are a little detached, which is one of the reasons why I think I like all, you know, fantasy realm shows, because I can't...
You know
real drama really... I can't shake the emotion.
That's a great point, because my wife always laughs at me because I have a difficult time watching Homeland. I have a difficult time because there's a part of me that's like, or 24 even. I remember she was in 24 and I was like, guess what, guys? That's probably happening somewhere. So I'm just not that entertained by the depth of sorrow that's in front of me right now. You know, it's hard for me to shake. Some people can love it. It makes me really, I have a hard time kind of almost like disengaging from it.
That's why, you know, like every show that I like all seems to have some type of detached from reality kind of a
like Lost. I loved Lost.
Lost or Battlestar or like I said, Game of Thrones and Doctor Who. Like they're all shows where you're like, or even Walking Dead. Like, oh, there's drama, but
that's not going to happen.
It's all not, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very hard for me to watch, you know, shows like, you know, like even like in watching episodes of Breaking Bad, I take that show really hard. Like it really just fucking scrubs on my soul.
I'd like
to
hear you talk about that for about an hour after the show airs. I wonder if that could happen.
Well, Tony, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Sorry, half hour, not an hour.
The Myra Method will be in stores in 2015.
Oh yes. If you follow chapter 15 of the Myra Method, I'll never write the book.
I never got there. It's just the first page is chapter 15. I never wrote it.
Sorry, guys.
Introduction. Congratulations, you purchased the Myra Method. Now put it down because you're never going to apply any of these principles. Is there anything you want to throw at any kind of little that you're allowed? Any kind of spoilery thing you're allowed? Not spoilery, but any kind of thing that we can.
Oh, can I ask questions and then you can just say yes or no?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So this could be a spoilery thing for. Yeah, but anyway.
Well, let's just see. Is the model home set back? So like,
I don't even know
are
what
they
that
in
means.
The model home?
Oh. I don't know. I can't.
You don't know.
I don't know. Here's the deal. My yes is going to be yes. My no is going to be no, kids.
Oh, yeah, shit.
Right?
We already said that.
Bringing it back around.
But I genuinely don't know.
Okay.
I really don't know.
Lucille's penthouse, is that set standing?
Yes. Yes, okay. Lucille's penthouse is there.
Great. Let's see. Your hand is still missing.
Yep.
Hook?
Yeah, there is a hook.
Okay.
Anyang?
I can't imagine Anyang would be back.
Don't know.
Oh.
I'm going to give you an I don't know on that one.
Uh-oh.
Let's see.
This is funny because obviously I've gotten this question a lot. And I always think about, because I brought up Lost. I remember watching Lost and seeing in the press the word flash forward. And I hadn't seen the rest of the episodes. And so then when it did flash forward, there was a scene, I don't know if you remember, when Jack is in a flash forward and Kate gets out of the car, but you don't know it's Kate.
Yes, by the airport.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I had seen the word flash forward in the press like the day before because the episodes had already aired and I was watching them late. And so when I saw that scene, I was like, that's Kate. And I missed that moment where everybody else was like, that's crazy. crazy. Because I had seen that word. So since then, I'm like really careful.
Isn't
about
it amazing how fucking spoilers are like. Like not having something not spoiled and experiencing in a moment is like heroin for people now.
Oh yeah,
and they get like we're crazy zombies for not for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like and if you do take that away from someone, they want to fucking murder you.
Well, I remember like I mean this goes back, but that ending on Sixth Sense, I'll never forget that. I mean that took me for a ride, and I think if somebody had told me the ending, I'd have been really bummed.
Yeah.
You know, because that was a mat. It was ruined for
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Did we talk about this before? How when I went to see The Crying Game, I was on a first date with a girl. We're sitting down, the lights dim, previews. The credits start coming up on Crying Game. And she's like, I can't believe it turns out to be a dude. And I'm like, what?
Oh,
what?
Man. And we're leaving.
I still made out with her.
Yeah, the Myra method, chapter 16.
But I don't think it went very well because halfway through the making out with her,
chapter 17, it didn't go well.
She said halfway through making out with her, and of course, like I'm high fiving myself inside, I'm like, oh my god, this girl I really liked is totally making out with me. I'm winning. And then halfway through, she was like, I should probably tell you that I am seeing someone. And I gotta go.
Wait, hold on. That's when you just kind of go back to the fact. Why did you make the choice?
Why did she spoil the crying game for me?
Why was your yes? Yeah. Why was your yes not yes, and your no not like not that? That sounds horrible. But it's like, why did she? Why did she even say I will go on a date with you if she was dating somebody else?
I don't know. I should probably track her down on Facebook and find out.
That's just incredibly manipulative, I think.
Yeah, I know. It was not. I did not have a great experience with that girl.
It's actually chapter 8. Tracking them down on Facebook.
Oh, good.
Got it.
Cool, man. Thanks. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
It was really fun.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.